Okay, so we're diving into Heckler v. Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
And, this one is practically legendary, in the world of administrative law.
Right.
And we've got legal briefs, we've got articles, we've even got some pieces here kind of musing about how this ties into AI.
Yeah.
So this is going to be interesting.
Absolutely.
So we're going deep on how this case really set a precedent, for agencies when they're dealing with these recurring issues.
Right.
And why it really still matters today, for anyone seeking benefits.
It's so fascinating how this case from 1983 still sparks a debate, about the balance between efficiency and individual justice.
Yeah.
And you could even say it foreshadowed so many concerns that we have today
Uh-huh.
about algorithms and how they're making decisions that impact people's lives.
Totally. And it all started with a woman named Carmen Campbell.
Right.
This wasn't just some theoretical legal battle.
Right.
This had real-world consequences for her.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a great example of how the law really impacts people, on an individual level. Carmen Campbell was denied disability benefits
Okay.
for a back condition that prevented her from working as a hotel maid.
Okay.
And the denial wasn't based on a doctor, disputing her condition or anything.
Yeah.
It was based on this grid system that the Social Security Administration started using back in the late 70s.
The grid. It sounds kind of dystopian,
Right.
like some bureaucratic machine, deciding people's fates.
Well, the official name is the Medical Vocational Guidelines. But yeah, it's kind of like a flow chart.
Okay.
It considers a person's age, their education, their work experience, and physical capacity,
Okay.
all to determine if there are other jobs that they could theoretically do.
Yeah.
The goal was to streamline, a massive number of disability claims.
Yeah.
But as Campbell's case shows, things weren't so simple.
I imagine not. So her individual circumstances, they didn't quite fit into those neat little categories.
Exactly. So the administrative law judge denied her claim based on the grid, just assuming that she could do other jobs.
Oh, wow.
But here's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
The Second Circuit Court of Appeals stepped in and said, hold on, this grid can't be the only factor.
Wow.
We need specific examples and, jobs that Campbell could realistically do given her limitations. And they were particularly concerned about her limited English skills, which the grid didn't fully consider.
So the Second Circuit was kind of pushing back against this idea of just ticking boxes,
Yeah.
demanding more of an individualized assessment of her abilities and her barriers.
Exactly.
So what happened next? This is where the Supreme Court gets involved, right?
Yeah. And the Supreme Court's decision in Heckler v. Campbell is where things get really fascinating.
Okay.
It wasn't a clear-cut victory for either side.
Really?
Yeah. They upheld the use of the grid,
Okay.
but they didn't give the agency a blank check.
Right.
They recognized the need for efficiency.
Yeah.
But they also emphasized that, claimants have to have that opportunity to challenge the grid's assumptions if their situation warrants
So it's
it.
kind of like saying the grid can be a starting point,
Right.
but it can't be like the end of the story.
Exactly. The court acknowledged that there are often, factors that the grid doesn't fully capture.
Okay.
Things like pain or mental health conditions, or as in Campbell's case, language barriers.
Yeah.
These are often called non-exertional limitations,
Oh, okay.
and they can significantly impact a person's ability to work,
Right.
even if they technically meet the grid's physical requirements.
It makes you wonder, like, how do you prove something like that?
Right.
Like, how do you prove a language barrier is truly limiting your job prospects?
That's a great
Like,
question.
what kind of evidence would someone in Campbell's situation need to present?
Yeah, it gets to the heart of that tension,
Right.
between standardized rules and individual circumstances.
Yeah.
The court said claimants need to provide evidence that their non-exertional limitations are severe enough
Okay.
to prevent them from doing a significant number of jobs that the grid says they could do.
So that could be like medical records or something.
Right, medical records, testimony from vocational experts, or even their own personal account of how those limitations affect their daily life.
So in a way, the court was really trying to strike a balance there.
Yeah.
They acknowledged we need a system
Right.
that can handle this huge volume of claims,
Right.
but also recognizing the importance of letting individuals you know, present their unique challenges.
Precisely. And this is where the concurring opinions from Justices Brennan and Marshall became really insightful.
Okay.
While they agreed with the majority's decision,
they
raised some concerns that have really echoed through the decades.
Okay.
Especially as we grapple with the rise of AI and algorithmic decision making.
That's fascinating. What were some of their specific concerns?
Well, Justice Brennan worried about claimants who might not have legal representation.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine trying to navigate this complex system and gather all this evidence to challenge the grid's assumptions without the guidance of a lawyer?
Yeah.
I mean, it can be a daunting task.
It sounds like it.
Especially for someone already struggling, you know, with a disability.
Right. It seems like a real David versus Goliath situation.
Yeah.
You know, where an individual is up against this powerful system.
Right.
That can feel very impersonal and overwhelming.
That's a great way to put it. And Justice Marshall, he highlighted the responsibility of the ALJ to conduct a thorough investigation into each claimant's limitations.
Uh-huh.
He worried that relying too heavily on the grid could lead to just like a superficial assessment, failing to capture the full extent of a person's disabilities and, you know, and their impact on their ability to work.
So they were both kind of sounding the alarm
about
the potential for the grid to become too rigid.
Right.
Too focused on ticking boxes.
Right.
Rather than truly understanding, you know, the human impact.
Exactly. And their concerns were prescient.
Okay.
I mean, in the years since Heckler v. Campbell, there have been numerous cases and criticisms
highlighting
the potential for bias and unfairness.
Right.
When these standardized systems fail to account for those individual circumstances.
Yeah.
And we see this debate playing out in areas far beyond just disability benefits, especially in the realm of AI and algorithms that are being used to make decisions about everything from, you know, loan applications to criminal justice.
So Heckler v. Campbell wasn't just about one woman and her disability claim.
Right.
It touched on these fundamental questions about how we balance efficiency and fairness.
Exactly.
Questions that are even more relevant today as technology plays a larger and larger role in our lives.
Absolutely. And that brings us to what I think is the most intriguing aspect of this case.
All
its implications for the future, especially as we see the rise of these AI-powered systems that could be used to make similar types of high-stakes decisions.
Yeah, it's almost like Heckler v. Campbell was like a warning shot.
Right.
Highlighting the potential pitfalls, you know.
Yeah.
Of relying too heavily on the standardized system.
Absolutely.
Even if they are designed with good intentions.
Right.
It raises some pretty crucial questions for us to think about. Like, what happens when we start using AI to create these kinds of grids?
Right.
These flowcharts that are determining, you know, access to benefits or opportunities or even freedom.
Right.
Are we risking a future where it's algorithms making these life-altering decisions instead of human judges?
It's a big question.
And if so, how do we make sure that those algorithms are fair and unbiased and that they truly consider, you know, the nuances of individual circumstances?
Those are questions that lawyers, policymakers, really all of us need to be thinking about. Heckler v. Campbell reminds us that even in a world that's increasingly driven by data or an automation, human judgment and compassion, those things have to remain at the core of our decision-making processes.
It's a reminder that technology should serve humanity, not the other way around.
Exactly.
We can't let efficiency, you know, become an excuse for overlooking those unique challenges and circumstances that people face.
Absolutely. If we take anything away from Heckler v. Campbell, it's the importance of challenging assumptions. Advocating for those who might be lost in the system and ensuring that justice and fairness remain paramount, regardless of how technologically advanced our systems become.
It's about remembering that behind every case, every data point, there's a human story.
Absolutely.
And those stories deserve to be heard, to be understood and to be considered.
Yeah.
Even in a world that's, you know, striving for efficiency.
Well said. Heckler v. Campbell continues to resonate precisely because it speaks to these timeless values. Fairness, dignity, and the recognition that, you know, those individual circumstances matter.
I think that's a great point.
Thanks.
And thanks for bringing this case to light.
My pleasure.
It's a reminder that, you know, the legal principles that we talk about, they have real world consequences.
Absolutely.
And our role as lawyers is to kind of navigate those complexities.
Right.
but always keeping justice at the forefront.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
And to our listeners, we hope that this deep dive into Heckler v. Campbell has given you some food for thought.
Yeah.
As you continue your work, whether it's in law or any other field.
Right.
Remember the lessons from this case.
Absolutely.
Challenge assumptions, advocate for fairness, and never forget the human element.
Yeah.
At the heart of every decision.
Well said.
That's it for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.